mind.
It's not the perfume. I've been doing a lot of research, as has legal staff, on the availability of large swaths of Perdido Key that currently have no trespassing signs on them to be accessible to the public, and we found 64 deeds, and correct me if I say anything wrong, that have a 75-foot perpetual easement for public beach access.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm very seriously happy. Congratulations. It's fantastic.
It's a big deal, but
it's a huge deal. Yeah, but
so this is, of course, Commissioner Jeff Burgosh talking during the county commission. This is the agenda review session from last week, and Commissioner Barry is the one congratulating him on his discovery that I still say is probable, but we're still waiting to figure some things out and I think make sure that there's been no intervening legal ruling that would invalidate the 75 feet of public access on the Gulf side of those first 64 leases on Perdido Key. I've said this when it first happened, when the news all came out. I said, this is huge news, probably. Just because you want to be safe. You don't want to say it's a done thing. Now, I think at this point, Jeff Burgosh is saying that it absolutely is a done thing based on some of the comments he had in the night meeting with some folks. But in the morning meeting, they were just kind of talking about it. And then the question is, well, what to do? Because if it's true that 75 feet of sand is available for the public to walk on behind the properties that until, for the last, 20 years at least, people have thought we're definitely not open to the public, and we've had all this fighting about signs and trash and public access. Well, he says, let's act. Like, come on, let's go.
But I'm on the legislative side, so the question I'm getting from everyone is, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I can't do anything about it. I need support from this board to do something about it. But I want to ask the attorney, and then I want to find out if I got 3 votes to open that up to the public.
Which Allison Rogers says, well, there's not really a vote to take exactly, because if the public access easement just is, there's nothing to be done. It already is.
Okay, I'm hearing 3 voices in support. Yeah. So, Allison, how do we turn what we know now into action and open that beach for the people?
In theory, you can do nothing, and the easement exists.
Right.
And it shifts the burden to somebody to say that it doesn't.
Right. And so if a person goes out, kind of under that theory, to, like, public access too, and then, hooks a right and starts walking on the dry sand. Because the wet sand, we know, you have access to up to the mean high water line or whatever. That's been that case for, everybody knows that. Well, I mean, not everybody, but that's, we know that part. It's the dry sand portion that you would have access on the 75 feet. And she says, assuming this is all true, you can just do it. And then it would be incumbent on a leaseholder to basically call the cops and say, get them off my land, get off my sand. And then the cops would come out and be like, yeah, just 68 feet in, he's good, right? I mean, that's kind of, or, I don't know, try to trespass him, and then you take a lawsuit where you'd say, no, I have access. So, that's the way these things work out in real life.
Well, just kind of acknowledging it. I mean, do we need to do something publicly acknowledging it?
Right now there's no trespassing signs in multiple areas. I've been out there and seen them, that I believe are within that 75-foot easement, which is a violation of our
ordinance. That's a code. I mean, that becomes an immediate code issue. So, yeah. I mean, I presume.
A habitat conservation plan issue. One of the things that's on your agenda for tonight is the
sign ordinance.
About the signs.
Correct. But
and that restricts them, that they would have to be up near the vegetative line and only 2 signs per parcel and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so the, where they're allowed to put signs to warn you not to trespass on their land, because there certainly is still some area where you cannot trespass, 95 feet in, right? That kind of thing. And they were having a vote that night about the sign ordinance, reducing the number of signs that Perdido Key owners are allowed to put up outside of their property in order to warn people away. But Jeff wants to go even farther, because there's been some safety issues at Perdido, right? There's been people who have at risk of drowning and also have drowned, right?
Part 2 of what I want to ask this board is, we got to find a way to get lifeguards out there. We had 3 people drown. We had one young man, 16 years old, trying to save his buddies, and he drowned. And then someone tried to save him, and they drowned. I'd like to find a way to get lifeguards at Access 2 and 3. They're right in the middle of that stretch of 64 parcels that have the 75-foot easement. Allison, can we spend public dollars if there's a 75-foot easement on private properties out there?
Yeah, can we hire lifeguards to protect or patrol the area where people are going to be swimming on their access easement that they have? And she says,
it looks like it's intended to be an access easement for the public to access across it or on it When you get beyond that, I think we should probably take a closer look at the level of intensity beyond that that would be envisioned.
And this is a good legal note. She's making the observation that the language of the easement is for public access. Public access is a little bit different than government enforcement access or government patrolling access, and certainly different than saying government can put up structures like lifeguard towers or, you know, can you drive across it on your truck? You know, I think what she's saying is certainly people can walk on it, but can we put up a tower? Well, that's kind of what he wants to do, and that may not be allowed under the language of the easement.
Well, the way it lays out right now, Stephen, is between the state park and a condo called Perdido Sky, every one of those 64 parcels has the 75-foot easement.
So that's contiguous.
Yep, and within that footprint there are two access points, access 2 and 3, with parking.
That currently exist that we have.
Currently exist. There's six additional parcels between Perdido Sky and Johnson's Beach, and those are the ones we're waiting for.
Because what Commissioner Barry, who self-admittedly does not get to the Perdido Key, to the beach, I don't get out there almost ever. You know, I'd have to have a reason to go. And, you know, formerly I wouldn't go, because if I wanted to go to the beach, yeah, I mean, I'm going to go to Pensacola Beach where there's access, right? And, you know, why would I go to Perdido where you get this little strip of access in just a couple of places when you can go to, right? But that's what, you know, Commissioner Bergosh is kind of trying to change here and, you know, make a totally different reality for that beachfront property.
Now, if you go west of the state park, which encompasses our access point 4, the crab trap, all that, that entire tract was deeded by Calvin Coolidge in 1926 with no public access to three families. That's what we found thus far.
And what, again, I don't think I quite explained it, but what Stephen Barry is trying to ask is, well, is it, you know, 3, 8, and 15 are no public access and the rest are public? You know, like, is there a checkerboard out there? And the answer is no, it's all of them, right, within that certain vicinity. Now, here's where things kind of got interesting to me in this conversation, because Commissioner Bender, who, of course, is a commissioner over District 4, which includes Pensacola Beach, where we have active guards and where we know what the presence of the lifeguards are there, something that Jeff wants to put out on Perdido, he's raising the kind of practical concerns that come from somebody who superintends the beach.
Yeah, I'm happy to get some lifeguards. I would say that, you know, we have trouble staffing what we have right now. And I think if you were to do any types of patrol, you're not going to do it within the 75 feet. Right. You know, you're going to have them, I mean, especially with turtles and everything like that, you're going to have them closer to the dune line, which would then not be in the easement. So, you know, I don't know if we would have to, I don't know how that would work if we get,
well,
right of use or something to have the lifeguards. I mean, they'd be lifeguarding, you know, going back and forth for the residents of those areas too.
So this is interesting. Two points. One is you can't just snap your fingers and make there be new guards, right? There is an active program to identify, recruit, train, hire lifeguards all the time, right? We're always having these tryouts at UWF, and, you know, Dave Green was always talking about this, and they're not necessarily running around with double the number of applicants that they need. They're kind of getting what they need. And do they have enough people that they can just up an extra staff an area of beach that heretofore we haven't been patrolling at all? The other, and this is kind of interesting, is Bender saying that, look, you know, 75 feet sounds a lot until you're a lifeguard. Because if you look, the lifeguard towers and the way they patrol, if they're on like the ATVs or in the trucks, is they're more than 75 feet away from the water because they need to create a sight line where they can have visibility to see people in distress, which geometrically takes farther distance in order to create the triangle you need for visibility. And so he's saying it might not be practical because inside of 75 feet may not be good enough for what they do. They might need to be 130 or 140 feet away. Well, then they're on other people's property, and that's not allowable because it's not a public access easement in that area, right? So Bergosh kind of responds.
Well, I'm going to put an agenda. If I have support for finding a way to get lifeguards, I'm going to put an agenda item. I'm going to buy the stands out of my local option sales tax. I believe that, is that an, I mean, it's a physical structure. I could buy that with local option. Yeah, I'm going to put that there, about $60,000. I've already talked to Eric about it. I'll pay for it out of my discretionary local option sales tax. But we got to find a way to fund it. And I understand there's staffing challenges too, Robert. We just got to find a way to do it, though. We just got to find a way.
Yeah, and so from a public safety perspective, surely it's a very important goal. Again, if the easements hold up legally, right? But so then what do you do? Where do you put these towers where they are allowed under the law? Because the law may not allow you to put a structure up, right? Just, you know, can you put a structure up in somebody's not quite backyard, right? They do own it, but then the people, the tower on somebody, it's just, it's kind of a weird thing. But Bender comes up with a solution that probably is the sensible one.
If the stands are at the properties that we already own at 2 and 3, then we can be outside the 75 feet.
Correct. We can be all the way up to the park.
You know, but the other thing would then be is that in the event of a storm, we then have to get equipment out there to move them back or move them into the parking lot like we do on the beach.
Like we do on the beach, yes.
But yeah, if what he's saying is the stands will be at 2 and 3, which we have the
property all the way up.
Yeah. And that actually makes a lot of sense because we have these two public accesses at 2 and 3, okay, in the middle of these, you know, 64 lease or 64. I keep saying leases. I think they're owned, and I apologize for making the terminology mistake. Anyway, you could put the towers there because the county owns that already, and you could put them farther back because there's not that 75-foot limitation. And then they could patrol east and west or range east and west from those towers as long as they're keeping to the 75 feet. So this is going to be an interesting conversation to see what happens going forward in terms of whether we can hire, whether we find. There are some new signs up apparently in Perdido Key, which don't really reflect this new reality. They more remind people that they can walk in the wet sand, and then there's kind of a picture drawn that doesn't indicate the 75 feet. I'll talk to Wes Moreno about that this morning. And I'll give you one other wrinkle that just kind of is an interesting one. One of the key things about making the lifeguards effective out on Pensacola Beach is the statutory authority that they carry to tell people that, you know, to get out of the water, to have a flag system, you know, you can't resist in a reasonable command. They have law enforcement light powers, okay? But the thing is, and that's why, you know, the enforcement ability to, you know, enforce like red flags, for example. But when you read the statute that grants them this authority at Section 74 of the Escambia County Codes, it gives it within here, quoting, the limits of such parks and recreational areas or other facilities and properties owned or operated by the county for park and recreational purposes. The county doesn't own this 75-foot. The county doesn't operate the 75-foot. And so even though there is a public access easement, I don't think that the lifeguards would have the statutory authority as it's written right now to be able to do their jobs on Perdido Key. You'd have to change that ordinance. And it wouldn't be hard to change the ordinance. But I don't think that my layman's reading of this, I don't think that they currently have the authority that you want them to have the way they have it out on Pensacola Beach. And you certainly don't want to put the lifeguards on Perdido without the ability to do the job that makes them so effective on Pensacola Beach. So there's some between here and there kind of stuff to, you know, wrangle out. But that's one of the concerns that I have about this, just kind of, you know, making sure that you grant them the authority. If you're going to put guards out there, if there's a lot of ifs, but if you are going to put guards out there, don't put them out there handicapped by the inability to do their jobs properly. That's all. 524 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
What's fun and happening in Pensacola? You'll find out as the City of Pensacola Parks and Recreation Department talks about it here on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Join us each month as we detail what's going on in your resource centers, parks, recreation programs, and at the Community Maritime Park. It's a great month to get out and play Pensacola. Tune in tomorrow morning at 9:30.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Heart failure, carpal tunnel syndrome, shortness of breath, stomach issues, lower back pain. How does it all add up? If you have heart failure and any of those seemingly unrelated symptoms sound familiar, it's time to talk with your cardiologist and get the full picture. They may add up to transthyretin amyloid cardiomyopathy. ATTRCM is a rare and underdiagnosed disease. Recognize the signs and discuss them with your doctor soon. Learn more at connectwithyourheart.com. That's connectwithyourheart.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Finding great people to hire can be like trying to find a needle in a haystack, but not with ZipRecruiter. Their powerful matching technology delivers so many qualified candidates, it's like finding a needle in a needle stack. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. For less hay and more needles, head to ZipRecruiter.
And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free.
at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Fox News personality Brian Kilmeade, afternoons at 11, before Dave Ramsey on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum.
Good morning, 526 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
A longtime star of the ABC soap opera General Hospital has died. Jackie Zeman's family said Wednesday she died after a battle with cancer. The Emmy-nominated actress played the character Bobby Spencer for more than 45 years. She joined the cast in 1977. House Republicans hoping to pass a new border bill as Title 42 comes to an end today. New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik says that the House will be voting on the Secure the Border Act when the pandemic restrictions expire. The White House, however, threatening to veto that bill if it does pass. And the American Psychological Association says teenagers should be trained before they're allowed to go on social media.
Yeah.
The organization issuing a set of 10 recommendations, mostly aimed at parents, and one of those was saying teens should be taught internet and social media literacy before they're allowed access.
Yeah, so should adults.
Exactly. No, this is one of those like a dirt kind of announcements from the APA that we all recognize social media is, it carries dangers, carries difficulties, carries risks. There's all, and people are not particularly great on their own at figuring out how to navigate all of that. But the idea, and so we get kind of locked into this mindset of, well, should we ban it for kids or allow it for kids without really grasping the sort of better question, which is, well, how can we train kids to use it safely? Or can it be trained to be used safely by kids? And then even if whatever your answer to that is, well, we can certainly train kids to use it better than they do without any training. And that's what the APA is saying is, you know, teach your kids, which is, you know, like teach your kids how to use TV. Which is also a dangerous technology. People don't think much about it, but it certainly is. You know, train your kids to use social media. The kind of thing where most parents are probably like, oh, yeah, I guess that's possible. I guess I could watch it with them. I guess I could see how they do and give them guidance. You know, that it's sort of a, oh, duh. That makes sense. But, David, thanks so much for the update. 437-1620, 437-1620. Yeah, when I was reading some of the recommendations about that yesterday, I was like, oh, yeah, look at how I failed. That's a good point. They say continuous scientific example of the positive and scientific investigation examination of the positive and negative effects of social media use. They want the literacy training. They think that people ought to be taught digital citizenship.
I could not agree more.
Right.
Yes. That's Agreed. Why I'm not on Facebook. I just
in a way that helps them better spot inaccurate or harmful content, understand the signs of problematic social media use, and how to nourish healthy online relationships, how not to fall prey to the various kinds of problems, shouldn't interfere with sleep and physical activity. Adolescents need to be getting enough sleep. You know, they should be careful about how it fosters comparisons, especially around appearance-related content, certainly an issue that we know is a problem for young girls. Harmful for a young person to pay excessive attention to their own photos, the feedback, the mechanisms that are built into social media on, you know, getting you the check marks or getting you the likes or the hearts or the shares or all of the metrics that people look. I mean, and the never-ending scroll. I mean, this, again, I feel dumb that I had been thinking about this primarily from the paradigm of, you know, just admittedly, what can be done to restrict or control or make the thing safer instead of thinking about, well, what can we do to teach people how to be safer within the unsafe environment of social media? And it may still require restriction and changes, but the other one is like, well, we could do that now, even without a law. So, David, what do you have coming up, sir?
There's still no deal for Warrington Middle School. More after Fox.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. This is the last day for Title 42, the pandemic-related immigration policy of having asylum seekers wait outside the country or be deported.
We're now in excess of 10,000 immigrants a day crossing the border illegally. While the administration blames Congress, Republicans here on Capitol Hill blame the White House. They're pushing a measure today that would enhance security at the border and tighten those requirements for asylum seekers.
Fox's Doug Luzader. New York House Republican George Santos is free on bond after pleading not guilty to federal criminal charges.
Santos acknowledged the government's right to pursue the charges.
Now I'm going to have to go and fight to defend myself. The reality is it's a witch hunt.
Allegations include fraud and lying to Congress.
Fox's Grinnell Scott. California Senate Democrat Dianne Feinstein returns to the Capitol in a wheelchair. She was away for 3 months after a shingles diagnosis. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 News Radio 92.3. It's 73, partly cloudy right now in Pensacola. Pensacola police say a man arrested for drug possession was able to briefly get away before being recaptured.
The individual was placed into handcuffs and was being escorted back to the cruiser when he took off running, and officers gave chase. He ran a couple blocks, two or three blocks, got tired and laid down, and the officers were able to take him back into custody.
That's PPD spokesman Mike Wood. He tells Channel 3 that 30-year-old Brandon Byrd was initially arrested near L and Gonzalez streets yesterday. He was able to get away, but he only ran about three blocks before being recaptured at the Pensacola Motor Lodge on Cervantes. He's now being held without bond. Charter Schools USA has rejected the contract that was approved by the Escambia School Board last week, leaving the future of Warrington Middle School still up in the air. More from News Radio's Joe Ford.
The Escambia School Board will review Charter USA's counterproposal Friday morning at 11:30, as they're still at odds over the protection of low-performing students zoned for Warrington Middle. It would appear that if the school board does not go along with the plan, they will vote on closing the school, and the students would be rezoned to Workman and Bailey Middle Schools. State Education Commissioner Manny Diaz has called for an emergency conference call for next Tuesday, where he could start probable cause proceedings over the district's inability to reach an agreement by the state-mandated May 1st deadline. Joe Ford, News Radio 92.3.
And as Title 42 ends today, the U.S. House set to vote on the Secure the Border Act. Supporters say that would finish the border wall, advance security technology, and support border authorities. Congressman Matt Gaetz says there's 9 control sectors at our southern border.
So what has the Biden administration done? They are surging force protection in just one of the 9, and you're getting feedback from folks in these other 8 sectors saying, you know what, I wish they wouldn't have done anything, because what they've done is they've gaslit a yellow brick road for the cartels to do their worst.
And despite its likely passage today, the White House says they would veto that bill, arguing that it could make elements of the immigration system worse. And Florida, now home to what Governor DeSantis says is the strongest anti-illegal immigration law in the country. That's what he said yesterday after signing SB 1718 into law that makes E-Verify mandatory for any business with 25 or more employees, penalizes people who hire illegal aliens and those who engage in human smuggling. It also prevents local governments from issuing ID cards to illegal immigrants. It is 534 News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
We're going to be seeing a small chance of rain as we go into the afternoon. 20% chance overall with a high near 83. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 70. Showers and thunderstorms possible as we go through Friday. 30% chance of rain with a high near 82. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 70. We're going to have some sunshine for your Saturday with a 20% chance of rain and a high near 84. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, we've got 73. It's partly cloudy in Pensacola, 75 in Gulf Breeze, and 72 in Milton. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. News Radio 92.3.
News Radio 92.3 is Pensacola's radio home for informative, local, and dependable news and talk. Listen to local talk in your morning and afternoon drive. Local experts during the day with the Pensacola Expert Panel. And national talk with Brian Kilmeade and Dave Ramsey. Listen to local news and Fox News at the top and bottom of every hour. Along with WEAR News during your afternoon drive and at 10 p.m. We have your traffic on the fives during your commute. And when breaking news hits, we have you covered. News Radio 92.3, now heard on 95.3 and AM 1620.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. From our spectacular beaches to the miles of rivers and unspoiled forests, the Gulf Coast offers some of the best family adventure around. And the Subaru Crosstrek and Subaru Forester are the perfect family vehicles to explore every dune and unpaved trail in Northwest Florida. Both come standard with sure-footed symmetrical all-wheel drive to take you deep into the wild places you love. The Crosstrek is powered by 182 horsepower Subaru boxer engine that adds plenty of go to any adventure. And the Forester boasts 9.2 inches of ground clearance to get you through every wilderness challenge. There's more than enough room for your gear and plenty of options to make the Crosstrek or Forester fit your lifestyle. In a Subaru, the destination is the journey. So grab the kids and the dog and follow your own path to adventure. Love is out there at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Carr City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
If you haven't been to Home Outlet, you're missing out on the best value on kitchens, baths, floors, and more. You could be saving big on your kitchen remodel with in-stock cabinets starting at $78 per linear foot and in-stock countertops starting at just $63. And with the guaranteed lowest price, you can be sure you're getting the best value for your project dollar. Visit us in-store or shop online for in-store pickup at homeoutlet.com.
Join Travis Thompson with Climatech of Professional Air, an American Standard heating and air conditioning independent customer care dealer in the Pensacola area, on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 9:30. Join in as Travis discusses how you can lower your energy bill and create a healthy, comfortable home. Join him today at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Local talk during your morning and afternoon drive. Local news every hour. On News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
By there Saturday night intentionally. It was almost midnight and you had about 60 plus people still congregating at the park. So I think if we're going to send a clear message, we need to do it early instead of waiting until, you know, months down the road to where we're not enforcing it. So I would like to see if the park hours are from sunset to dusk, and we need to enforce that.
Yeah, so this is Delarin Wiggins, City Council President, last Thursday's meeting talking about, or sorry, Monday's agenda review, excuse me, for tonight's meeting, talking about access to the skate park, the hours, and some of the issues there, and raising the question of, well, if we're going to leave the lights on, you know, if we're going to enforce the rules for, you know, what time they're supposed to be there, they're staying there too late, the kids want to have access, and, you know, kind of the swirling set of challenges here, because you can't just turn the lights off, because then you have people, you know, doing what they do in the dark. We don't have a fence. There's no way really to enforce this. And, you know, how do you solve basically this set of challenges? So yesterday we talked about this pretty extensively with Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, great to have you. So I get that this is a little bit of a, oh, what did we do? You know, like we're kind of in the middle of the rollout and we don't have a fence. Therefore, we don't have a gate. Therefore, we have low capacity for easy enforcement of closure of the park because we have lights on overhead, which is good because we don't want bad behavior and graffiti and all of the what's that comes with it. What I keep getting hung up on with this is it seems to me like if the kids want to skate, let the kids skate. Why don't we make the curfew on the park not dusk, but, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock? I mean, that seems to me to be a much more, like, user-friendly kind of approach to the facilities that people definitely want to have. Milton, by the way, is 10 p.m.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Those are conversations we had, as a matter of fact, yesterday afternoon. And, you know, I think really to back up here, you know, understand this is project's unique in its length of time from conception to reality. It, you know, was going to be controlled privately and then given to the city. Then it was taken by the city under a different administration. Now under a new administration, a new Parks and Rec director. The design began on Parks and Rec, moved to Public Works, where all our projects have moved starting January in 2022. So no rationalization of why it's 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, but if I were to give kind of the general overview assessment, I think, with a lot of different iterations of how this was going to be built and how this is going to be operated, we probably lost a few things in the shuffle over the years. So, but hey, the buck stops with us, and we're going to figure out a way to, make sure that we do the best that we can. You know, as a business owner in my previous life, I'm not big on posting a whole lot of rules that you can't enforce or didn't have the ability to.
Right.
So we're going to relook at those. And, you know, I've started a conversation with our folks about, do we look at a potential operator? And there's a lot, there are so many different models around the country. Some charge per use, some charge annual, some don't charge at all. Some are 24 hours. There's so many different ways to do it that also have different situations. They might have a fence and we don't. They might have lights and we or not have lights and we do. So, I think we probably could have done a better job of assessing this and looking at not just what the rules should be or what the neighboring town did, but what is our I think we should mold those into what our unique circumstances are at our park, that where it's located and all of that. And so we're in that assessment mode that it's really going to be two phases. One is going to be some of those quick draw things that, like you mentioned, do we just go to 10 o'clock? You know, if the demand's there, certainly noise isn't an issue. If you've ever been under that interstate, we
right,
know that.
Right. I mean,
skates aren't going to be any louder. But if we say no BMX bikes, for example, well, what some cities do is they have, 2 days a week where you allow bikes. But to do that, we've got to have an attendant there in some way.
Right.
So, those are all the things that really, probably should have been considered already. And again, it starts with me. So we're going to look at this. I think we're going to really break it into two buckets. One is going to be, what can we implement in the next 30 days? That and whatever, massaging of rules, changing of rules, and how we enforce, and then as well as what the long-term, health of the operation. I think there's a lot of positives potentially with an operator, lessons and, where you could really accentuate the value of having this park, so we haven't decided on that yet, but we're starting to, have some of that conversation that brings us better value of having a park that's this nice. But I do want to say we aren't not doing anything at this point. We do have police doing foot patrols through there. That's difficult to enforce full time for a police officer. But we had a conversation collectively yesterday, and I would think our goal is in the next week or so to at least know what those short term changes are going to be.
Great. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, this is a good problem, right? The problem is a lot of people like the brand new park. that's the kind of problem that you want, and they want to use it. And by the way, I had not thought about it, but you're exactly right. It's a great point that noise for the surrounding neighborhood can't possibly be an issue because there's no chance you're hearing skaters over the sound of the interstate, which is right there. That's obviously that's right. But I guess, my lean, and I express this on the air, but I just tell you directly, my lean is, hey, let it be open. And, maybe we find out if there is a limit on the hours that it should be open, but, maybe try just to, hey, here we go. This is kind of how we're going to do it. Cause you've already said it, you can't task a PPD, with enforcing something that's unenforceable, and you want to make sure that the rules make sense. And the fact that it doesn't have a fence around it, which I think is, I've been to ones that have fences. I've been to ones that don't. And, there's aesthetic value in not having a fence around the park. I will say this. I like your idea. Your idea of having somebody who might have a financial interest to be there. But please don't make it a charge for use. That'd be my one very strong. Please don't make it a charge so that kids have to pay a fee to go use the park. That would be. I would not support you on that.
No, and. Yeah, totally understand that. And we would not consider that. Now, it might be that, hey, as part of the trade-off, because, look, remember what the city's cost would be to have an attendant here. You're talking about 12-plus hours a day,
right.
7 days a week. That's multiple people. That's a six-figure, a strong six-figure number to be able to operate it.
And not at the times that are a concern, right? Not at the night times when there's the concern.
Correct. And look, we do this already, right? We do this at Roger Scott. We do this at other, we have private operators who come in and say, hey, if we have some financial interest. Now, what would be different about Roger Scott, to your point, is that, the elements of this would remain free. But I imagine an operator would say, hey, look, we'll operate it. We'll secure it. but, you know, we want to be able to have lessons there with, that we charge for. Well, yeah. Great. I think that's a good thing for our youth. You know, I think so. So, yes, I totally understand. And I agree with your point. This is not to, to privatize it, but to, how can we help offset some of the expense of being able to police? Because this is different. This is not building an amenity in a neighborhood that stays relatively passive, that may have a playground.
Right.
We have invited people to this the same way we've invited people to a day use marina. But what's going to happen when we open? 48 boats are going to show up. So we, that's where, you know, we probably had a misstep in saying, hey, this is different than just your normal park opening. This is, we are telling people to come here. We are encouraging them to come here. And we've got to be able to have a way to enforce these rules. So look, I think there's two things to keep in context here. It's not as if the, you know, our police, you know, 911 is ringing off the hook with complaints yet. You know, it's, we obviously see that, it, that some of the rules aren't being enforced, but, you know, we aren't in a situation where we're being reactionary to, you know, a lot of legal complaints at this point. It's just the fact that we've got rules posted that, you know, are difficult and or impossible to enforce at this point. And second, we do have to keep in context, like you said, this is new. So the decisions we make are in perpetuity, right, at this park. And
right.
So we don't want to overreact to the demand that's there now versus what we think the demand's going to be long term, although I do believe it will remain.
Oh,
so,
no, I agree.
You know, at the end of the day, we've got to look at those both ways.
And also, I think what I also heard you saying was that the city is exploring the possibility of building a BMX track right nearby so that we could solve everybody's problems, right?
Yeah. Once we get this one figured out, you call me about the next BMX.
I know. I'm just messing with you, but I know the BMX folks would be like, oh, that'd be great. Milton has one. Why can't we? Hey, one of the other things, you kind of buried the lead in your press conference yesterday a little bit, and you just mentioned it, the day use marina at Community Maritime Park. 2 weeks. Is that right? We're going to open this thing in 2 weeks is the goal?
Yeah, absolutely. That's our goal, shooting for the 24th or 25th. We'll have some more information out officially, but the at the end of the day, this is a perfect example. I keep comparing the two because think about how many people are involved in a day-use marina. It's going to be the port, public works and construction, parks and rec, the police department to enforce. I mean, we're even talking about potentially putting, you know, the Pensacola fire boat down there. I mean, there are so
yeah.
Our meeting that we have another one today has about, feels like about half the departments in the city are involved. So fortunately, we caught this one and have delayed the start of this. I mean, it is built, this is something that we, you know, weren't going to open until we had a clear understanding of how it was going to operate, who's securing it, you know, hours, all those things we have now caught and, you know, are well on track. So we kind of have a check-in meeting today, and we're well on track to get this thing done and ready to go here in a couple weeks.
No, that's great, and that makes sense. You know, so you don't figure out that what you did was a ready-shoot-aim. You're trying to make it a ready-aim-shoot, which I very much appreciate that. Last thing here real quickly is, if you had a takeaway from yesterday's joint meeting with the county and the presentation by Dr. Savage about homelessness, what's the thing that you took away that you think is going to make a difference for homelessness in our area?
Well, first of all, if we're going to make a difference in homelessness, it comes from one sole function, which is alignment regionally. And I mean by the city and the county. And our COC. I mean, because right now we all kind of have our own plans, all well-intended. And at the end of the day, if we want federal funding to help reduce homelessness here, which is the largest fucking money, maybe unprecedented, I know unprecedented so far, then we have to get behind the same vision, the same strategy. And that was my hope of when I, you know, leaned on the Interdepartmental Agency of Homelessness to come visit us. As I said, guys, that's what we need. We need that tipping point where we all can look each other in the eye, understand what the data says and how we move forward. So I would say the biggest takeaway for me is not so much a data point. There was a lot of interesting ones, but it's more so in how do we now say, guys, we heard what they're talking about at the federal level. This is where the funding to help come up with solutions is going to come from. What are the one or two things we can get behind? We don't have to carbon copy the entire, federal strategic plan and try to implement it in 1 year. How do we get behind a couple different ideas here that we're just in complete alignment on? If we do that, if we're talking in a year from now and we've done that, I think that would be a huge success for us as a community.
No, I love that. Pick one or two things that you think are high likelihood of working and you can get started on them and then, you know, adapt from there. We always like to end with a bit of a lightning round for you, Mayor Reeves. I don't know your level of Star Wars fandom, but I'm going to presume it's at least average. There is a lot of vehicles, a lot of transportation, a lot of, you know, spaceship. Do you have a favorite vehicle from the Star Wars universe?
I laughed to myself when I heard you talking about Star Wars a couple of days ago, only because I have not seen any Star Wars. I'm like that guy that as a point of
cut
pride.
Cut the interview. I'm like the Skanska guy with Channel 3. Cut it off.
You want to play Oscar music?
All right, fine. Let you have the pass for now. Remedial education to follow. Are you a gift card giver, or do you not? Do you think gift cards are a good gift?
No, only because I know the other side of it as a former gift card seller, that I think the redemption 63%. So you know, most people don't turn them in. So I feel like that people don't care about them. That's a good enough data point for me.
So it's great for the business that sells them. But
that's
not
the most educated answer I've
ever
heard.
That's a fantastic answer. Yeah, absolutely. And last thing is, on spoilers for movies or TV shows, do you care whether you know the ending? Do you like to know the ending, or would you rather be surprised?
Definitely rather be surprised. No, I'm disappointed if I get a spoiler.
All
absolutely.
Right. A little bit of redemption from the Star Wars thing, but you'll work on it, I know. All right, homework for Mayor Reeves. Mayor Reeves, as always, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you again next week, and we'll look forward to the city council meeting tomorrow night.
Hey, I was watching football for a living. I mean, it's a three-hour game. That's all my movie time.
Oh,
I don't know. It just sounds like an excuse to me. No, but it's so
what
true.
What kind of mayor do we have?
That's right. Oh, my God. This is crazy. Cats and dogs living together.
He's our blockbuster brethren.
I forgot about that. You're right.
Maybe it's probably an aversion because how many times?
How can a blockbuster, former blockbuster store employee have possibly done his job adequately if he hadn't seen Star Wars?
The same way a former Cat Country employee is not going to, you know what I mean, wants to listen to A, B, C, or D.
That's so
I
funny.
Get it.
And we,
although the ACM Awards are tonight, just real quick.
Right.
And of course, our Cat Country brethren are there tonight. They won an ACM. They took the
exactly
whole station.
Right. That's fantastic.
I know. It's going to be so quiet in here.
So,
thank God. They're broadcasting from Texas.
The follow up on this yesterday, if you weren't listening to this interview when we did it live, is a really good friend of ours and one of the associate pastors over at Marcus Point Baptist Church, Craig Heinzman, who is the best guy. I love
him
so much.
One of my best friends, right?
He had immediately in the time that between like when we had finished this interview and like the top of the hour, 10 minutes later, he had posted a change.org petition to get Mayor Reeves to watch. Mayor Reeves ought to watch the Star Wars movies.
He wrote it in like 10 seconds.
He wrote it with ChatGPT. He told me he used an AI to write it. That's why it went so fast.
I love Craig Heinzman.
That's my favorite part of the story.
He's also like, the one that dressed like Luke Skywalker on a tauntaun.
Oh, did he? Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh,
he
anyway,
did that for
fantastic.
A Star Wars movie. It wasn't even Halloween.
I love it. Oh, man.
Craig for president.
5:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are thinking about selling or buying a home, either way, and the reason I say it that way is because when we talk about Christine Leavenworth at Leavenworth Realty, I often talk about her as a seller's agent. You know, she knows how to stage it and price it and set up the open house and all of the, and that's all true. And that, you know, she gets houses sold in a day or two, often above list price, you know, even in this market, like that kind of stuff. That's all true. But the other side is the buying. Like when you're buying a home, she can help you buy a house. But we don't talk about it a lot because, you know, what's really needed is the inventory, the scarce inventory. But she's telling me, look, Andrew, it's pretty simple. I understand how to sell homes, so I understand the seller's perspective really well. And that puts me in a great position to help people buy because I know what can and can't be negotiated. I know what price will or won't be accepted. You know, I know what other people are going to offer. I know how to make sure that we beat those offers if that's the goal of the buyer. Like, she's the best expert to help you buy a home because she's the best expert to help you sell a home. Anyway, so just find out, you know, ask her what she can do for you. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, 723-9158.
Are you ready to start saving money on your energy bill?
Join Compass Solar Energy tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Compass Solar has been locally owned and operated here in the Pensacola area for over 20 years, and they are Northwest Florida's premier solar company. Call in with your questions as we navigate through the rising cost of energy. That's tomorrow at 9 with Compass Solar Energy and the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Escambia County is full of opportunities, and your next opportunity could be right around the corner.
On Thursday, May 18th, Escambia County is hosting a career fair from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Pensacola Bay Center. This is your opportunity to speak with hiring managers and apply for your next career in person.
See our current openings and learn more at myescambia.com/careers.
We'll see you at the Escambia County Career Fair on May 18th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Pensacola Bay Center.
Spring is a great time of the year for gardening, whether it's fertilizing the lawn, pruning, planting shrubs and summer blooming plants, and of course, tending to that vegetable garden. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got spring gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesday, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9. It's sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, Blue Sky Landscaping, and Barnes Feed Store.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. The Life After 50 Expo is Friday at Sanders Beach Corinne Jones Center. Learn what seniors need to know at this free event. HappeningNextDoor.com for more. The annual Pensacola Kids Fishing Clinic is Saturday at Maritime Park. Registration begins at 8:30. The first 350 kids, ages 5 to 15, accompanied by an adult, get free instruction and a fishing combo. See Pensacola.fish for more info. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Tune in to News Radio Pensacola on the FM dial at 92.3 and 95.3. Listen on the AM dial at 1620.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
I try to discover a little something to make me sweeter. Oh, baby, refrain from breaking my heart.
I love that you're singing. I do. So
the mic was on.
It
sorry,
is.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. I, you know, 5:57 News Radio 92.3. Come on, yeah. You know this is what you want. I feel, you know, what I was thinking about this the other day. Like, how would I describe this show to somebody who didn't listen to it? I'm like, I don't know, man. It's kind of a, just a party in your car on your way to work.
It
is. It's informative and educational. And, you know, we play the songs and we play the clips and we just kind of try to have a good time and make you make life a little bit more fun for you on the way in. That's mm-hmm. That's the idea. Just saw this.
It makes the news not so depressing.
We make the news not suck. I like that. Billboards, what do you think? Maybe not. Okay.
I love the station so much.
I love being
able
to do what we do.
I come in because I'm friends with her. Yes, I love it.
The judge who presided over the Parkland school shooting trial has resigned. Elizabeth Shearer, a 46-year-old judge, she tendered her resignation notice yesterday, explaining her decision thus, "It has been a privilege to serve the people of the state of Florida for over 10 years. End quote. Like, that's it. No explanation. Now, during the trial, you know, I did not watch this trial, but, you know, I was kind of reading some of it. She had a lot of back and forth with the defense attorney. She said that when the defense rested without even calling all of their witnesses, in fact, calling barely any of them, she said it was the most uncalled for. This is in the courtroom. The most uncalled for, unprofessional way to try a case, to which the defense said, "You're insulting me on the record in front of my client." Of which she said, "You've been insulting me the entire trial, arguing with me, storming out, coming late intentionally if you don't like my ruling. So quite frankly, it's been long overdue, so please be seated." And then, you know, like after the trial, she went down and hugged the members of the prosecution, the victims' families. The Florida Supreme Court took her off of the post-conviction motions for another defendant because they thought that she was, you know, kind of might be biased on that. So anyway, she's resigned now entirely. And I have completely taken up all of David Wayne's time. I'm sorry, David, but you have your local news coming up next after Fox, right?
I absolutely do, and it won't suck.
I don't mean you, quite obviously.
We all believe you. Yes. We all believe you entirely.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.